Welcome to The Brief, a video podcast that aims to explore vital issues and events in international affairs and bring you perspective and analysis. Once again, we're focused on the tragedy in Gaza as the death toll among Palestinians has surpassed 39,000, with more than 90,000 wounded. The majority of those casualties are reported to be civilians, specifically women and children. Since October 7th, Israel reports almost 700 of its soldiers have been killed, many during the original assault by Hamas. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed the U.S. Congress and vowed his goal was still total victory over Hamas. While fewer than 100 Israeli hostages being held in Gaza are still alive, according to reports, and families are putting a lot of pressure on the government in order to make a deal that would involve a permanent truce in exchange for bringing all of the hostages home. Joining us to discuss the current state of affairs is Palestinian human rights lawyer and former PLO spokesman and negotiator, Diana Boudou. Diana, let's begin here. No one could predict that this conflict in Gaza, this tragedy, was going to go on for 9 months or more. And still, there's no end in sight.
You're absolutely right, Jim. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the question. You know, the problem, Jim, is that I didn't think, and I don't think anybody thought, that here we would be 9.5 months later with Israel still committing these massive crimes, with the world being able to watch genocide, and that there's no international leadership that is telling Israel to stop. What we're witnessing now, Jim, is the equivalent of six times the bombs that were dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Wiping out of the Gaza Strip almost in its entirety, hospitals that have been bombed by Israel, schools, mosques, universities, 40,000 Palestinians that we know of dead. There's some estimates of as high as 186,000 by The Lancet, and yet there's still no end in sight. And I really attribute that to a failure in international leadership to push Israel to stop. You know, I fully expected that Israel would do what it's doing, but I didn't expect that the world would stay so silent for 9.5 months.
Well, when we look at it, we've heard from Prime Minister Netanyahu himself. He came to the U.S., talked to the American Congress. But in that speech, he simply denied that it was happening at all, said the humanitarian aid, they're allowing it through, said that the casualty rate is among civilians caught in the crossfire was negligible, was tiny, the best in history. How do you counter this?
This is the problem, is that he is a person who is not only perpetrating genocide, but he's a genocide denier. And we have report after report from the United Nations and from other international agencies, leave aside Palestinians, who are exactly countering what he has said. We already know that two-thirds of the people who've been killed in Gaza are women and children. We already know that this lie, when it comes to the trucks, has been debunked, because the UN has said that there has been virtually no aid trucks coming in, particularly after Israel seized the Rafah crossing point on May the 3rd. And we already know, based on the testimony of doctors and others who've been there, American doctors and otherwise who've been there, that what we're seeing, and they're calling this a war against Gaza's children. So doesn't it all surprise me that the person who is carrying out genocide is also a genocide denier? The problem for me, Jim, is that this is a man who got at least 40 standing ovations. I stopped counting at a certain point. And they simply believe what it is that he's saying, because the cold, hard truth of the matter is that these are American bombs that are being used to bomb kids. And without U.S. weaponry, without U.S. support, this would have ended a long, long, long time ago.
One of the things that struck me as I watched that address was how he joined others, and there's been a long line of them, in pointing a finger at the protesters in the United States that raised their voices, jeopardized their diplomas, and took terrible risks to go out and say, not in our name, not with our taxpayer money, we don't want to see this. And he accused them of being on the payroll of Iran. He accused them of being useful idiots.
Yes, and this is, again, not at all surprising from him. He does not understand that these are people who are outraged that their taxpayer dollars are going to pay for bombs rather than going to solve problems like homelessness in the United States or provide universal health care to Americans. Instead, they're being used to fund and fuel and support genocide in Gaza. And so this is why we see so many people who are out protesting. Iran is on the payroll of, so many people are on Iran's payroll. That's absolutely absurd. The point of the matter is that students are going out and protesting because they don't want this done in their name. They want to make sure that the legacy that they leave behind is that their university divests from apartheid Israel, just in the same way that they divested from apartheid South Africa. We have people who are going out to the streets and protesting, former people who are working within the administration, because they don't want to see U.S. foreign policy squarely in favor of genocide. They want to see an end to this. And these are the voices that this administration should be listening to. They shouldn't be listening to the people who want to perpetrate genocide and who are looking for cheerleading for genocide. They should be listening to Americans. And Americans across the political spectrum are saying that they want to see an end to this and that they don't want to see more money going to Israel.
Well, you bring up an important point because, of course, the hostages, the Israeli hostages that are being held in Gaza by Hamas, which ostensibly has committed war crimes beginning on October the 7th, heinous crimes in attacking civilians and murdering civilians. But when Kamala Harris spoke with Benjamin Netanyahu after his, 40-plus standing ovations in Congress, she stressed to him that it's got to stop. People have got to reach a deal on the hostages, and they have to stop the killing in Gaza. And it's being depicted in the Israeli media now as, well, that's going to prevent a deal from being reached. It's just almost absurd the way things are being countered as soon as they're brought up. When people say we need to stop this now, they're telling us that we're going to make things worse.
Absolutely. And here's the tragic irony in all of this is that if Netanyahu was truly interested in bringing back the hostages, he would have struck a deal a long time ago. Hamas, within the first few hours, said, release Palestinian political prisoners and we will release the Israelis. And instead, he embarked on this campaign, and it's been shown that on day 300, we're more than 300 days into this, that the only way that Israel has managed to secure the release of these Israelis is either through a ceasefire, which was brokered back in November for a temporary period of time, or by committing gross crimes, and they've only managed to release seven. And that was at the expense of over 270 Palestinians who were killed during their during the operation that they carried out in the Ansarat refugee camp back in June. So it's very clear that if Israel wants these Israelis back, that there's going to have to be an exchange, that they're going to have to stop bombing Gaza, and they're going to have to release Palestinian political prisoners, as well as those Palestinians who have been abducted. The Israelis just a few weeks ago released figures indicating that there are 21,000 Palestinians who are being held in captivity, being tortured, by the way. And so it's very clear. We know what that equation is. The problem is that Netanyahu knows that the minute that the war ends, that his term ends as well. And there is enough dissent in the streets in Israel that people are blaming October 7th on him, as they should. And they're saying that they want to see an end to this government.
What is, there's so much talk about the day after. And unfortunately, the one thing that we didn't get in Mr. Netanyahu's address to Congress was any talk, any clear idea. And this has been the problem since the start of what do you do the day after? He talks about having a government that is not tied to terrorism. But at the same time, we see the events there on where you are right now in the West Bank that have got to be worrisome for Palestinians, because it's almost like a green light has been given to the settlers movement, the most extreme and violent elements of that movement, to push Palestinians out of not only Gaza, but the West Bank.
Yes. You know, Jim, it's terrifying being here. And the fact that what was the most striking in Netanyahu's speech was that he didn't provide any vision because he doesn't have a vision. His only vision is to try to get rid of as many Palestinians as possible and to make life unlivable in Gaza. You know, if you think about it, let's say that the bombs stop being dropped today. What do you do tomorrow? If you want to go to school, you can't do so in Gaza. If you want to get a higher education, you can't do so in Gaza. If you need medical treatment, it's going to be outside of Gaza. If you want to live in a house, not on a beach, in a beach tent, it's going to be outside of Gaza. Everything that he's been planning has been so that Palestinians will eventually leave Gaza. He's made the Gaza Strip completely unlivable. And that's why he has no vision. That's why we didn't hear a plan articulated. Now, in the West Bank, it's also terrifying. Since October the 7th, close to 500 Palestinians have been killed, one-third of them Palestinian children under the age of 18. We've seen thousands of Palestinians who've been rounded up, thrown into prison, some of them my friends, who've been tortured, held without charge, held without trial. And in addition to the hundreds of checkpoints that Israeli forces have put up, we now see very active settler terrorism, with settlers setting fire to Palestinian homes, kicking out Palestinians from at least 10 Palestinian villages, and making life so unlivable that people want to flee. And this is exactly what the point is that they want to make life so difficult for Palestinians that they neither have a safe space in Gaza, nor do they have a safe space in the West Bank, and that people eventually leave. This is the whole end game for them. Fewer Palestinians, more Palestinian land.
You know, we've got to talk about the ICC, the ICJ. There is a perception, I think people look at that and they say, well, these major institutions have come out very strongly in defense of Palestinian rights and the violation of those rights. But at the same time, nothing really happens with these groups without the action of the international community, right?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. You know, Jim, international law is not self-executing. There is no sheriff, for example, that's going to implement international law. This requires states, and for these states to be implementing international law and to take a decision that that they're going to make sure that international law is respected. So far, it has not happened. And I think this is where the movement must change. Just as in 2004, in the aftermath of the 2004 ICJ opinion in regard to the wall, an ICJ opinion that found that the wall was illegal, we saw that the BDS movement ended up growing, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement ended up growing. So too, I suspect that we're going to see greater international action to make sure that Israel gets isolated, that the BDS movement once again grows and that sanctions are placed on Israel. This is the only way forward. Otherwise, the message that we're telling Palestinians is that they're beneath the law, that every other people around the world are above the law, and in particular Israel, and that Palestinians are beneath it.
At the same time, the rise in anti-Semitism has sounded alarms across Europe and elsewhere in the United States directly. And there's an accusation, of course, that the more Israel is criticized for its actions in Gaza, the worse the anti-Semitism is going to get, and that Jews are being blamed for the policies of a government.
You know, unfortunately, this is the result of the way that Israel labels itself. When you label itself as being a Jewish state, in other words, representative of people who are Jewish, then there's a problem there because Israel is not acting in the name of people who are Jewish. It is acting in the name of a very right-wing fascist ideology called Zionism. And so I think that it's important at this point in time for people to recognize what is legitimate criticism of the policies of the state of Israel versus what actually anti-Semitism is. And Israel does not speak on behalf of all people who are Jewish. And this is why it's so important for people to distinguish between the policies of the state and between the actions of the Jewish people.
What is the way forward for the Palestinians themselves? As we talked about the day after, people are wondering, well, would the Palestinian Authority be able to handle it? How about these recent meetings that have been held and yet again another agreement for Fatah? Hamas and so many other Palestinian groups to come together to coalesce into a single entity that can better represent the people?
That's a great question, Jim. Look, one of what we've seen since 2006, since the elections that took place, the last general elections that Palestinians had, which was in 2006, there has been a split between the two major political parties, Hamas and Fatah. And there's actually 14 main political parties, but we always focus on the two. And since that time, there's been a split between these two political parties. And yet, poll after poll since 2006 has indicated that the number one priority of Palestinians is to see reconciliation, to see these parties come together and have a unified vision. Now, it's important to keep in mind that all of the political parties that we're talking about, every one of them believes in an end to Israel's military rule. None of them say that they prefer the settlements or that they prefer the occupation or that they don't believe in the right of return. They're all united in their positions. The question that they're not united on is in their implementation. And so since 2006, there have been a number of attempts to reconcile the two major factions, being Hamas and Fatah. And they've gone without success. Much of the reason that it hasn't been successful is because of the approach of the United States and Europe in addressing Abu Mazen and giving him either carrots to make sure that these unity agreements are not implemented or give him sticks to make sure that these unity agreements are not implemented. By carrots, I'm talking about dangling more financial support to the Palestinian Authority, sometimes touting a peace process. And in the form of sticks, it's the idea of withholding money from the Palestinian Authority. And so Abu Mazen, in addition to his own ideas of not wanting to see reconciliation because it makes him obsolete, we've had this approach by the Europeans and primarily by the United States. Just this past week, we saw that these factions signed a unity agreement in Beijing. And what's different this time around is a few things. First, it's not the Europeans that are involved or the Americans that are involved. It's Beijing. This is China that's now getting involved. And that is significant. And second is that we're in a different place and in a different space. There are very few carrots that can be dangled in front of Mahmoud Abbas. And while the sticks can certainly be used against him, the Israelis have been cutting off funds to the Palestinian Authority now for more than 9 months. So now is the time that I'm hoping to see that there will be national unity. I think the problem is going to remain whether Abu Mazen feels that threat and will do everything to try to undermine this, or whether he's for the first time going to take Palestinian interests at heart and push for a national unity government.
He's not the most popular guy there where you are on the West Bank. And when we look at this, I mean, we've just seen one legendary politician, Joe Biden, step aside due to his age. He's seeking another term. He had to dismiss that. Abu Mazen's been able to stretch one term to unbelievable lengths.
Almost 20. He's stretched one four-year term into nearly 20 years. And yes, you're absolutely right. He is terribly unpopular. The issue, of course, is that nobody wants to replace him because to replace him is to somehow buy into the idea of the Palestinian Authority. And nobody really wants to be the security subcontractor to the Israeli occupation, which is what the Palestinian Authority is. Nobody wants to be traveling around and trying to collect money here and there in order to pay salaries. It's not a great job. And if he really wants to leave behind a good legacy, he'll not only step down, but he'll allow for different ideas to come forward of what the future is going to look like, not just in the Gaza Strip, but also in the West Bank.
Are the Palestinians really getting an opportunity to have that discussion among themselves? I mean, there have been, civil society movements in the past that have tried to bring up, solutions to the problem, because that's what's needed. If we're going to talk about land for peace, or we're going to talk about a two-state solution, somebody has to come up with a plan that's going to be palatable to the Israeli public, not necessarily the hardliners and extremists in government right now, but they've got to come up with something that's going to satisfy both sides, a workable plan. And that's what's hard.
Yes. Yes. You know, Jim, the oldest civil society institutions in the Arab Middle East are Palestinian institutions. There's a long history of civil society here. The problem for Palestinians is that of leadership. And the reason that it's a problem is not because we're lacking leaders, they're plenty. It's because many of them have been assassinated by the Israelis in prison, such as Marwan Barghouti, who is still in prison, or they've been quashed by the Palestinian Authority and otherwise because they don't want to hear those alternative voices. There are plenty of ideas that have been put forward. The real issue here, Jim, is that it's up to Israel to end its military occupation. It's not going to be the Palestinians who do it. It's Israel. Now, whether they do it because of internal pressure, the internal pressure is too much to bear for one reason or another, or external pressure coming in the form of sanctions and otherwise, the decision is ultimately going to be an Israeli one. I certainly hope that the pressure is coming from the outside rather than from the inside, because I just don't see that Israelis are going to change. The occupation has become so normalized here. The settlements are so normalized. There's no sign that says, welcome to occupied territory when you're entering into any of the Palestinian cities and towns. And there's no sign that says you are now entering into an Israeli settlement. All of it has been blurred, which is why it's apartheid. And so this is where I would hope that there'd be this international leadership that says to Israel, enough, this occupation is illegal, it's gone on far too long, colonization is no longer allowed, apartheid is no longer allowed, and because of that, we're now going to start imposing sanctions, arms embargo, you name it, on Israel, so that until such time as they begin to respect international law.
Well, there's Israelis who absolutely agree with you 100%. I talked to Hemi Shalev, the Haaretz opinion columnist and analyst, who said that Israelis don't see the occupation, so it doesn't really bother them. And there's been no increase in empathy over the plight of Palestinians in Gaza, and that they think that this will all go away. All these demands will all go away, the war crimes charges, all of this, as soon as the fighting ends. And they have a good reason to. That's what happens every single time. The West talks about implementing things. They say this isn't helpful. This is, the U.S. State Department always puts it in the terms of this isn't helpful, these settlement expansions and things. But they don't actually do a damn thing about it.
You're absolutely right. And this is what fuels the sense that Palestinians have nobody supporting us. They simply don't. All of these wonderful slogans of human rights, women's rights, children's rights, their graveyard is resting in Gaza. Because for as much as these slogans are touted, when it comes to Palestinians, is simply not implemented. And here is the tragedy, is that if the world respects international law and believes in a system of international law and order, and I do, then it has to be implemented against Israel. But as it stands now, Israelis just don't see that. They have been told that they can have an occupation, get away with it. They've been told that they can commit genocide and get away with it. It's really sad for me as somebody who also lives in Haifa to be surrounded by people who think that it's just okay to kill kids, 15,000 kids that we know of, that it's okay to bomb schools, hospitals, mosques, universities, flatten a city, the largest Palestinian city, a city that I once lived in and loved. They think that that's okay. So much so that some of the biggest TikTok stars now in Israel are soldiers who are broadcasting everything from the way that they are blowing up buildings and dedicating it to their children, to people who take over Palestinian homes and spray paint save the date announcements in a Palestinian house, to then people, singers who've been singing genocidal songs that get over 20 million views on YouTube. So this is a society that has been told that genocide is okay as long as they're the ones who are perpetrating it. And that's the part that needs to end. They need to be told that it's not okay, and that there has to be a price paid for the actions that they take.
Well, I'm old enough to remember when Israel, of course, still occupied Gaza, And the occupation there was so brutal that Israeli society began to recognize the symptoms of this occupation coming back on them, an increase in domestic violence, violence against women, violence against children. And this was said to be a part of that experience. And frankly, I think one of the reasons that Sharon and others, I know there were many political reasons and others, but that was a place that Israeli soldiers didn't want to go, didn't want to be posted, because you came out damaged goods. There's a price to be paid for this.
Yes. Yes, this is the problem, Jim, is that the violence that they're perpetrating is going to boomerang back onto them. And that's why when we talk about what happened on October the 7th, it was very much the result of 56 years at that point in time of military occupation, 56 years of violence. To maintain the occupation, especially for that period of time, requires a whole lot of violence. And unfortunately, very unfortunately, it boomerangs back. Now, with what they are doing, what Israelis are doing inside Gaza, I fully expect that once again, it's going to boomerang back onto Israeli society. We're already seeing it. It's already happening as we speak now. And so I think that if they want to be clear, and if the world wants to see a place that where this doesn't happen, is we've got to get to a place in space where Israel is held to account and not given free rein to do whatever they want to do. You know, I also remember being in Gaza at the time the Israeli soldiers were there. And you're right, it was not at all pleasant. Just in the same way that it's not pleasant here, because once again, to maintain an occupation requires a great deal of violence. To take land is violent. To put up a checkpoint is violent. To monitor that checkpoint, to arrest people, to imprison people, to demolish a home, all of it is violent. And that's why the occupation is illegal, and that's why it has to come to an end.
You know, people look on at Gaza. They look on at that death toll continuing to rise, the violence, the destruction that has gone on there, and they ask themselves, what can I do about it? I mean, I am here. I'm looking at it. Yes, I can go out and protest, but really, what can I do? They're asking that question. What can they do?
There's three things, and it's a great question, three things that I think can be done. First is to support the growing boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. And that is at bdsmovement.net. Boycott means for you to boycott Israeli products, Israeli companies, anything that's affiliated with the Israeli institutions. Divest is for universities and others to be divesting from Israeli companies. And for those students, be pushing for their university to divest from Israel as well. And then sanctions is where we see that sanctions are actually placed on Israel, just the same way that sanctions were placed on South Africa during its apartheid era. That's one thing. The second thing is, one of the things that has been so disheartening to me is the attempts on the part of many within the media, I'm not talking about you, Jim, but many within the media to excuse what Israel is doing and to somehow brush it or paint it in a very pleasant brush. Things like not taking on the Israeli lies that came out in the early days and continue with them, such as the lies that were perpetrated by President Biden when he talked about babies that were beheaded, which is completely a falsehood. And those people need to be held to task for the disinformation that they have been spreading. And it's important for people to hear and to understand and to see that Israel has not allowed foreign journalists into the Gaza Strip. They've also just yesterday extended yet another time the 45-day ban on Al Jazeera. This is now their third ban. And so it's important for people to listen to Palestinians and to what's happening in Gaza from the people who are in Gaza, and for them to hear what it's like to live under this genocide, and push back on the media. And then third, and this is the most important, is that it's important for your representative of Congress and for the administration for them to hear some people that they are not in support of this genocide. They don't want weapons to be sent to Israel any longer. The more that they hear from ordinary individuals, they must become responsive to that. It just doesn't make sense that all of these bombs are being shipped to Israel and effectively carpet bombing the place. It's a small area, as you know. It's 26 miles long and 12 miles wide at its widest point. For so many bombs to be dropped on this one area is causing untold damage, including environmental damage, and it's up to people to be pushing back with their members of Congress and the administration.
Well, we have looked at it and seen the terrific, horrible toll that has been taken, especially on women and children. As a Palestinian woman, I mean, you have been involved in negotiating with the Israelis. You've been involved with the PLO. You have been a lawyer, activist, human rights advocate, all of these things. How is it affecting Palestinian women, this whole experience?
You know, Jim, when you look at the death toll, two-thirds of those who've been killed are women and children. Gaza today has the highest percentage of child amputees in the world. I have friends who have given birth over the course of the past 9 months, and how difficult that is, given that there's no water, no medical supplies, nothing that's available. And you can see that it's women who are bearing the brunt of this. You know, everybody has been bearing the brunt. There's not one segment of society that isn't affected. It's physicists, it's doctors, it's lawyers, it's teachers, it's ambulance drivers, paramedics, you name it. But in particular, it's women and children who've been bearing the brunt of this. And the fact that you can see that there are so many children who are living a life that they shouldn't be living at such a young age is heartbreaking. And this is why it's so important for it to stop. You know,
how do you keep your hopes up? Do you still have hopes in all of this? You see, you know, political challenges, military challenges, challenges with garnering international support. How do you maintain hope?
In a weird way, the only way that you can live here is if you have a measure of hope and hope that tomorrow will be better and hope that the world is going to see Israel for what it is. And so I have that hope. But the other thing that gives me hope today is that I see so many people who are going out and protesting. And yes, we do see that the Biden administration has remained firmly committed with alongside Israel. It's diplomatic support, weapons, you name it. As, same with parts or much of Western Europe. But the people are not in support of this genocide. And to see all of these people, capitals all around the world, trying to raise their voices and say, not in my name, is what gives me hope. And that's the part that I walk away with, is I feel seen. And as a Palestinian, whether you live in the West Bank, behind a wall, behind checkpoints, or you live in Gaza, blockaded, this is before October of 2023, blockaded, besieged, or as a Palestinian in Israel, you're always invisible. You're always made to feel as though you're invisible. You're not seen. That Israel's concerns are just that much more important than you are. And for the first time in my lifetime, I feel seen. I feel seen when you get countries like South Africa going to the ICJ and demanding that Israel stop genocide. I feel seen when I see these protesters around the world coming out and speaking. And I feel seen when I see these students who are risking their degrees just to be able to say, I don't want my tuition fees to be going and investing in Israel. I want to divest from Israel. It's for me the first time I feel seen, and that gives me hope.
Diana Buttu, you are seen, and we thank you very much for sharing your views with us.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for joining us. Please explore many of our other episodes of The Brief Podcast here on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a like or subscribe. I'm your host, Jim Clancy, and you've been briefed.